This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. As the nation has a conversation about race and equality of education and opportunity for people from minority communities, our next guest says progressive cities like Madison have a lot of work to do. In fact, he says cities that have a reputation for liberal politics, think places like Austin, San Francisco, and yes, Madison, are some of the worst places to be for African Americans and other people of color when it comes to racial disparities. Tim Wise is with us now. He's a national anti-racism educator and author. His new book is called Under the Affluence. Tim, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, how are you?
Well, you say cities with progressive politics, Austin, Portland, Madison, some of the worst places to be for people of color. Why is that?
Well, I think there are objective reasons why, but I also know that it's just what I hear from black folks and folks of color generally whenever I speak to people in those areas. You know, these are people whose families oftentimes lived in the South, lived under the worst parts of segregation, and then they moved north or they moved west, perhaps, to take advantage of industrial jobs and opportunities. But they will talk about how, in many cases, the racism that they experience, though it may not be as overt, it's almost worse because it's a form of invisibility, being looked through, being not seen, being treated as a sort of a constant outsider in places like Dane County. You know, we know that that is very clear. The biggest disparities between white arrest and black arrest for drugs, for instance, and incarceration rates for narcotics in the entire state of Wisconsin are in that county, a supposedly liberal, progressive place, where we know that there are white folks right now blazing up in dorm rooms at the University of Wisconsin who are not being suspected, not being detected, not being arrested. But lots of black folks are being suspected, detected, or profiled and arrested and incarcerated in that county and all throughout the state and all around the country. And not just in those, you know, reactionary places we might expect, but in these, you know, really sort of hip havens where everyone assumes that progressivism reigns. So it's both the data, but it's also the fact that black folks tell me that that's the case. They'll tell anyone willing to listen that that's the case. And I think it's probably valuable to believe them when they say that's it, that that is their experience.
Now, one might imagine, and maybe progressives in these places might imagine, that they would be the most racially enlightened white people in the country, that rooting out structural racism would be a top priority. Why do these objective measures and these perceptions run against their self-image?
Well, because I think white progressives oftentimes, you know, depending on where they're from, and I say this as a lifelong Southerner, I think white progressive folks who are from the South tend to have come through the lens of race to arrive at our politics. You know, if you're in the South and you're a progressive, you have to deal with race. I mean, it's in the foreground of everything that's happened in our region's history. But if you're white and you're from the Midwest, you're from the West Coast, the Pacific Northwest, the Northeast, you have the conceit and the luxury of believing that racism is just what us stupid yokels in the South do, and that somehow everybody else is more enlightened just because y'all were on the right side of the Civil War. And so I think what ends up happening is you have a lot of white progressives who are progressive because they have the right environmental policy politics, the right reproductive freedom politics, the right LGBT politics, the right anti-war politics. They're Bernie Sanders supporters from Vermont who have the right politics against the oligarchy and the wealthy and the elite. But if they didn't come up through an anti-racist lens, if they didn't have the benefit, frankly, of growing up in a place where the left was defined by civil rights and by the black liberation struggle, then even really well-intended white left folks and progressive folks can miss that piece, you know. And I think that's maybe the luxury of being from the South, is that, you know, I didn't have the benefit of being able to ignore race, and I don't think most white left Southerners have, but I think a lot of other folks, you know, have been able to miss that and sort of think about their progressivism with regard to every issue but race, and just assume that the rest would take care of race when in fact it doesn't.
Do you think that color blindness ends up being a goal then for those people who you say didn't grow up with that civil rights background as an immediate issue, but then that leads to blindness to issues of color?
Right. Well, absolutely. I mean, the 2 books ago, the book I wrote called Colorblind, and the subtitle of which was, you know, The Rise of Post-Racial Politics and the Retreat from Racial Equity, looks exactly at that. It's a critique of post-racial liberalism. You know, we think of conservative folks sometimes as being the ones who are trying to enforce colorblindness by saying, you know, oh, we shouldn't think about race, and we shouldn't have diversity initiatives, and we shouldn't have affirmative action. We should all be colorblind as a way to, you know, keep the lid on racial inequality. But in fact, there is a liberal version of that. I mean, even the president himself, as a man of color, has played into that back in 2004 when he gave the keynote address at the Democratic National Convention, the big applause. applause line of that talk was the part where he said, you know, there's not a white America and a black America and a Latino America and an Asian America. There's just the United States of America. Well, that's utter nonsense. And it's such nonsense that I'm quite certain Barack Obama knew when he said it that it was nonsense. But he said it nonetheless because, of course, it was good politics. And yet it speaks to a truth that isn't true. We do, in fact, have multiple Americas based on racial cleavages. And this sort of notion that we can paper those over in the name of progressivism is no more logical than thinking we can paper them over in the name of some reactionary national Americanism. They're both, I think, bad ideas.
Talking to Tim Wise, an anti-racism educator, author of the book Under the Affluent, talking about cities known for progressive politics. He says, not great places for people of color to live. And Tim, in a recent piece where you were interviewed, you talked about talking to people, African-American people, mainly in places like Madison or San Francisco, who had left or were thinking of leaving. What kind of stories did you hear from them?
Well, the first time this ever happened was one of the first times I ever went to the Bay Area, you know, and I, growing up in Nashville, I mean, goodness, I thought that, you know, San Francisco and Oakland and places like that and Portland were just nirvana, you know, because growing up in Nashville as someone on the left, you know, we had a hard time finding, you know, five liberal Democrats to put in a room, let alone people who were truly progressive or left. So I get out there and I'm sitting, talking, having coffee with the guy who I came to be friends with. And you know, his thing was, look, this is the most racist place in many ways that I've ever lived. And he had lived in Birmingham, he lived in Dallas, I think he lived in the St. Louis area. You know, he lived in a lot of places that we think of as more racist. And when I asked him why that was, you know, he gave me the answer that, look, you know, it's in those places I know where I stand. In those places I know, he said, you know, who the enemy is, and I know how to avoid them, or I have strategies for dealing with them. But out here, I don't have that. And really, the Bay Area is a great example because, you know, white leftist and liberal and progressive folks think of San Francisco in the 60s and the Summer of Love and, oh, the hippies and Haight-Ashbury, and isn't that great? What they forget or maybe never knew is that at the very same time that white folks were, you know, all getting high and having a good time in the Haight, black folks in Oakland were being, you know, hassled by police. Black Panthers were being arrested. They were being beaten in the streets. It was never the summer of love for black folks in the Bay Area. But white progressives, you know, had the luxury of ignoring that while they were hanging out with the Grateful Dead and Janis Joplin or whatever else in San Francisco. So there's a real divide. And I think that's one of the reasons why black folks who've gone to these supposedly progressive places are moving back to the South, you know, because at least they say there, they know who the enemy is, and they sort of know what they're up against. So they're going to Charlotte, and they're going to Atlanta, you know, places like that. They're going to PG County outside of Washington, D.C. Now, those places still have issues, make no mistake. But they're the kind of issues that are familiar, and I think sometimes that's easier.
What would you like to see change? What's your prescription for maybe members of these communities we're talking about, like white progressive communities in these cities, and for urban leaders in those areas?
I think that white progressives in those areas need to acknowledge that there is no liberatory politics. There is no truly progressive politics possible in this country that is not anti-racist. If you are a progressive activist type, but you don't think and talk about race in everything you do, if you're a health reform activist, an educational reform activist, and, you know, a Bernie Sanders supporter who talks about, you know, economic justice, if you're an ecology and environmental activist, an anti-war activist, and you're not, if you're a food security activist talking about the availability of good, safe and healthy foods, and you're not talking about, you know, food deserts and the way they affect people of color disproportionately and the racial justice aspect of that, then you're not doing your job. There is no progressive politics possible in a country like the United States, which has never been a white country. It is certainly increasingly not a white country that is not anti-racist. And so I would say we have to inculcate and put in to all of our movements an anti-racist lens. As for urban leaders, I think they have to have real serious conversations, whether it's mayors or city councils, school boards, et cetera, about how to bring a racial justice frame to everything from housing policy to zoning policy to transportation policy. You know, if you're going to have communities that are gentrifying, you're going to have fair housing initiatives. You're going to have to ensure that the people of color who live in places like North Portland, before North Portland got hip and had Pilates studios and yoga mats and coffee shops, you know, there are a lot of low-income black folks who live there who are being pushed out. Their rent's driven past the point of affordability. Their property taxes going through the roof. They can't pay them because they're on fixed incomes, many of them elderly. There's got to be some protection for the people who were in the neighborhood before it became hip. And that's what I think urban leaders have to think about if they really want to bring about justice.
Briefly, are you seeing communities starting to have those conversations?
Well, I think some are. There are some communities. Minneapolis is trying to do this. Their mayor is trying to get out front and really talk about white supremacy and white privilege. I don't know that she'll be around long, keeps talking about stuff like that, but I certainly like the effort that she's making, and I think it really speaks to these issues. The National League of Cities is doing some really good work right now around racial justice initiatives and undoing racism in cities around the country. I've been in Baltimore all week. They're certainly having these conversations in the wake of the April uprising. So I think there are conversations, but ultimately, you know, we can't leave those conversations to black and brown folks to engage. Those of us who are white and claim to be progressive and left, we've got to be challenging our brothers and sisters in our own communities about these things and making sure that we understand the importance of racial justice to the larger issue of economic and social justice.
Tim, thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you.
It's Tim Wise, anti-racism activist, author, and educator. His latest book is called Under the Influence. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.